This is Steve Palmer of Mooch. I'm here to tell you that you're listening to Oral Innovations Space Rock Radio.
Stone. speaking to you.
Thank you.
Greetings and welcome to Oral Innovation, Space Rock Radio's all Mooch Steve Palmer special. Steve has been recording his Mooch since the early to mid-1990s with several albums on the Taste label, then Andy G's Dead Earnest label, and now Ambient Live. He also records his Blue Lily Commission. He's a science fiction writer with five published novels to date. But he's a very talented artist, and there's been a flurry of activity this past year. The Dr. Silbury album was released by Ambient Live last year. The track you just heard was from that album. There's been reissues of older Mooch albums, some never before released. The Blue Lily Commission albums have been reissued as digital downloads, and the new Mooch album, 1967 and a half, which is very different from Mooch, has just been released also by Ambient Live. So it seemed appropriate to do a special. And through the magic of the Cyber Studio, we are able to chat throughout the show with Steve. And we'll also have some commentary from John Sherwood of Ambient Live and Chris Gill, who sang on both the Dr. Silbury and 1967 and a half albums. And that was him you heard singing on the opening track, Jupiter Event. So, hello, Steve. We opened with a Dr. Silbury track. That album was a real departure, not just for Mooch, but really any of the music of yours that I've heard. I thought it was a great combination of the trademark Mooch sound plus songs. Can you tell us a little bit about what led to that? Seems like a lot of transitioning went on since Gaia Space.
Well, I looked back on Gaia Space after it had been released, and I was very pleased with it. I mean, I think it's a really very nice album. But I looked back on it and I realised that I had kind of gone as far as I could with the more ambient or ambient stroke rock instrumental album. And I had wanted to do songs for quite some time, but never really had the format to do it. And I hadn't met any musicians, I don't think, that I really had wanted to work with. So when Chris Gill and I met, and he gave me a couple of his CDs, and on one of those CDs was a song where he sang. And I thought to myself, oh, Chris has got a really quite a nice voice. So that's really why I asked him to sing on Jupiter Event, because I felt that his voice was a good, nice voice, really nice voice. And I had wanted to have a go at something really big, something quite epic in scope with vocals and the theme. And that's why I wrote Jupiter Event. So, having written that, and having also wanted to work with other musicians like Bridget Wishart, then I just felt I wanted to do something with songs. I felt it was the time to do vocals. And this thought had been at the back of my mind for quite some time, but it had never really come to fruition. It had never come to the fore of my mind. And I'd always done ambient work, or instrumental work, or psychedelic work without vocals. So I think basically the time was right. It's partly that I met Chris, and Chris turned out to be the right guy for the job. And also, I really genuinely think I had gone as far as I could at that time with instrumental music. I mean, I will go back to instrumental music, and I'll always be in this space rock psychedelic vein. But I think that was the reason, really.
All right, I'm going to kick off the next set with a song from the new album, 1967 and a half. This is called Truth Fairy.
Flying near Truth Fairy, underneath my pillow, moon is light, not weary, supple shine like willow. Is it a lie you want to give me? Is it the truth you want to take away? Waking up, toes chanting, feeling light and easy. Go to work to get bored, LSD and taxes. Was it a lie you came and gave me? Was it the truth you came to take away? San Francisco days, being Golden Gate. Owsley Stanley's here,
Thank you.
That was the title track from the Mooch album Past Vorta, which was originally released in 1994 on the Taste label and has now been reissued by Ambient Live as a doubleheader with the Starhenge album. I'll be playing a track from Starhenge in a while. And before that was Truth Fairy from the brand new Mooch album, 1967 and a half. And if you're familiar with Mooch and haven't heard the album yet, it might have come a bit as a surprise. So Steve, tell me about 1967 and a half. If Dr. Silbury was a departure in 1967 and a half, certainly takes it to another level by following a clear stylistic theme. How did that album come about?
It was a combination, really, of a few things. I'd always had in the back of my mind this question about why the songs of the 60s are so distinctive, why they seem to be so wonderful and so melodious, so tuneful. They just seem to have a slightly more magic aura than maybe songs from the 80s or even the 70s, possibly. And I've had discussions with my dad, who is also very musical, about where people like Paul McCartney and Paul Simon get their tunes from. Where do these melodies come from? Are they discovered? Are they created? And in our family, this is called the music argument. But, you know, my dad and I have sort of discussed it. So that was at the back of my mind. Where do songs come from? And I'd started listening to a lot of 60s music, apart from the stuff that I listened to, like the Beatles. I was getting into things, people like the Byrds, the Mamas and the Papas. So those two aspects came together in my head. And then I really had the title for the album first, to be absolutely honest with you. It's 1967 and a half. It was just one of those quirky alternate titles that I felt would fit the theme really well. I wanted to do an album that was based around the Summer of Love, but was an alternate version of that. It kind of looked back at the Summer of Love with fondness and affection, but also because it was a looking back, I was able to use irony. I was able to actually say, well, you know, this is what the people of the time thought was going to happen in the world, but actually it didn't happen. It got a bit darker. So I was able to actually celebrate the Summer of Love and also look at what went wrong, and do it with this theme of an alternate year, an alternate time. I suppose really it's a kind of a science fictional concept. It may have come from one of my science fiction ideas or something like that. But that was the idea, really. It was the title, 1967 and a half.
Okay, next up I'm going to play a track from Golden Ear Machine, a never-before-released Mooch album recorded in the late 90s and now released by Ambient Live as a doubleheader with the Crypt of Artificial Intelligences. This track is called West, East, West.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the songwriting on 1967 and a half. I see Paul Rowley credited on some songs. Did you write the rest? Song for song, I think it's a consistently strong album.
Yes, the songwriting. I mean, I had wanted to have a go at the songwriting. That was part of really why I was coming to this point in my sort of musical career. I wanted to write songs, I wanted to write melodies, I wanted to write tunes to see if I could do it. And also really, like I said before, to try and discover where they come from. Specifically, last year I had a very difficult, very traumatic start to the year. I had a very difficult home life, personal life for a few months. And after that had calmed down slightly, I had my summer holiday, which I have a six-week summer holiday because I work school terms. And all this music sort of flooded out. There must have been a lot of stuff inside me that was waiting to come out. A lot of tunes, a lot of melodies, a lot of ideas. They all came out. In fact, actually, over that summer break and just before it, actually, two albums worth of stuff came out. The songs for 1967 and a half and the songs for 1966, which I'm going to be recording, well, which I am recording at the moment, actually, with a local vocal trio. So all this stuff just came out, really. And what I do when I have a tune or a melody or a hook or something is I get it recorded down on my studio, which is a computer-based studio, it's a digital studio, so I don't actually forget the stuff, because it is quite easy to... They're like dreams sometimes, they're ephemeral, you can forget a melody when it comes to you, so I like to get them down straight away. And then with Paul Rowley, Paul's a very good friend of mine, who I worked with actually originally down in the West Country in Britain for many years. And I mastered an album for him, an album of his own songs. And I was really gobsmacked by how great these songs were, really terrific songs. And there were a couple of songs that I kind of felt would be good for cover versions. There was one, English Wisdom, in fact, was the one that I imagined or reimagined as a kind of Byrds-style song with the sort of chiming guitars and the vocal harmonies. And then the other song, Diamond Cutter, I really love the lyrics on that. I don't normally go for lyrics, actually, but the lyrics on that are terrific, very mysterious. So I felt that would be a nice cover version could come from that. And as I was putting this on together, I imagined it sort of being recorded in a garage, like a sort of, you know, chunky, almost primitive garage sound to it.
Next up is Flow Thing from the Gaia Space album, released in 2006 on Andy G's Dead Earnest label.
Thank you.
If I'm following the news on the Mooch list correctly, you're preparing both 1966 and 1968 A albums. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, yes, that's right. I've got two more 60s styled albums on the way. One is 1968 A, which I'm sure Chris will have something to say about in a moment. And that's going to be, I suppose, kind of a follow-up to 1967 and a half. I think it's going to have, my feeling is it'll be slightly more progressive in sound. But we'll see. I mean, it will make itself as it makes itself. With 1966, I wanted to do an album with a group of singers, either three or four. So I advertised locally to see if anybody would be interested, and got a few replies, and eventually settled on three singers. And they're going to sing the songs from 1966 as a vocal trio. I'm not going to track them individually or record them individually. And I think the production on that album is going to be slightly more, I won't say basic, but it'll be more stripped back. There's not going to be the same production values as there were on 1967 and a half or Gaia Space or Dr. Silbury. It will be more of a 66 sounding album, I think. So the 66 album is currently being recorded, and that's going fine. And then with the 68 album, again, I had more material than I realised I had. I had written a lot of songs, and I spent a very happy weekend a couple of months ago sorting it all out and realising what I had, and then putting it in song form. And a lot of the stuff was in song form already. I kind of recorded it and annotated it as I do. And I was quite surprised to find that I had about 9 or 10 songs. So that was great. But anyway, Chris will now say, because Chris has heard some of these songs, so he'll be able to tell you more.
1968A, I've heard a few tracks off it now, and it again, it's given this really feel-good mood. It makes you smile. It's nice because Steve puts these tracks in that keyboard tracks in that tell you where the vocal melody is. And again, as I was with 1967 and a half, I listened to it. I think I could never do that. But I think, well, we got through the first one, so I'm sure you'll get me through the second one. But the songs are really nice. They're really happy. Again, there's backing vocals. And the other thing that's going to happen on 1968A, as far as I know, is we're going to do some more backing vocals, because as my confidence grows as a singer and as Steve gets his head around the songs more, we're going to do some more backing vocals and some more harmonies. So while it will still be quite psychedelic music and it'll be 60s music, I can see a lot more happening on this one than on 1967 and a half A, certainly vocally anyway, which presents a whole new challenge to me. And I'm kind of looking forward to it, but kind of worried about it at the same time. But I know when we start it and I get there and Steve puts his hand up to say it's recording, I know I'll be okay, but I've just got to get to that point.
Next up is The Crypt from The Crypt of Artificial Intelligences. And once again, that's been released by Ambient Live as a doubleheader with Golden Ear Machine.
Thank you.
The amount of activity you've experienced in the past year has been pretty phenomenal. I mean, two new Mooch albums, Mooch reissues, Blue Lily Commission reissues, more new albums in the works. Do you chalk this all up to a tidal wave of inspiration, good fortune, both?
Well, I've got John Sherwood of Ambient Live to thank for that. He told me that he wanted to expand his what he was releasing. He wanted to go away a bit more from the pure electronic music that he was releasing. And he was a fan of Mooch, so we kind of inched towards this idea where he would release because there is quite a lot of Mooch music that hasn't been released. So we came to this idea that he would release some of the back catalogue. And he's well up for it, basically. And there is, you know, there is quite a lot of music. There's the albums that were released on Taste. There were a lot of albums recorded in the mid-90s that never got released. And there's a lot of stuff as well from the late 90s, which I recorded after I'd moved down to the West Country in Britain, which has never been released and which I would like to get out there. So John's going to release those. And then, of course, I'm recording all the time. I mean, it's just something that I'm naturally very creative. I'm naturally just get through a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff inside me that has to come out. So I just do produce a lot of work. It's just, I've always been like that. It's just, I guess it's just the way I'm wired, I suppose.
I'm going to play another track from the Dr. Silbury's Liquid Brainstem Band album, and this one has Bridget Wishart on vocals.
and sky. They live through the ages and they multiplied.
Number of exciting guests on Dr. Silbury in 1967 and a half. Bridget Wishart, Cindy Lee Rule, Don Falcone, Chris Gill. It must have been a challenge organizing it all. Obviously, Don and Cindy are here in the U.S. Were you able to get together and record with everyone else?
I didn't actually record with Bridget, actually. She has her own studio in Somerset where she lives. I did meet her, I have met her, and I had a lovely chat with her. But actually she recorded it with her partner in her house, and then the vocals were sent up to me on disc, as I recall, CD, I think it was. And that's actually how it works with my American guests, Cindy Lee Rule and Don and Karen in San Bruno. And that works really well. Actually, Karen recently has been using an internet transference sort of method. I think it's Box. Is it boxnet.com? I can't remember. But anyway, she can place her files there, and I can download them to the computer. More environmentally friendly as well. I'm constantly aware that I if at all possible, I don't want to be sending discs all over the place with small amounts of recordings on. If I can use MP3s or even AIFF files through the internet, then that's the way to do it. I think there are certain guests that I will work a lot with. I mean, I do like Cindy Lee Rule's violin playing. She's a terrific player, always really up for whatever I sort of put in her direction. So fans of Mooch will be hearing more of Cindy for sure. And then with Chris. Chris actually lives quite near me. He lives about 10 miles away in Wales, because I live just on the Welsh border, but in England. Chris comes over to the house quite regularly, and because my studio is basically in a room in my house on the top floor. I've got a room which is just the studio. And so he comes over and sings his parts, you know, when the songs are ready. So actually synchronizing it has been quite easy, I have to say. I mean, the fact that most people I work with have got their own studios. Damien Redmond recorded his terrific drum playing in a studio in London on Damien's drums, and then just posted it up to me. So that worked fantastically well. And Jez Creek as well, he recorded his terrific sequences. I asked him for I basically asked him for some nice sequences, and he came up with this wonderful, wonderful flowing piece, of which I used the first 8 minutes, I think, or first 7 minutes, I think. So, but again, he sent me that on a CD, and I built up the piece over what he had done. But I have to say, on that piece, it was really the really nice quality of the sequences that really set that piece off.
Next up is a track from the Starhenge album. Starhenge was originally released in 1995 on the Taste label and has been reissued as a doubleheader with Postvorta. This track is called Abu Huraya. ¶¶ We have John Sherwood here from Ambient Live. You've really taken an interest in Mooch, the new the Dr. Silvery album, the new 1967 and a half album, all the reissues, and they've been coming out at a pretty steady clip.
I'd already heard Flight of the Dub Voyager, and so was familiar with Steve's music. And when Gaia Space came out, I bought a copy, and it completely bowled me over. The opening track is just fantastic. It really is. I think Steve had seen the sort of stuff that Ambient Live was putting out, and the suggestion sort of happened that Ambient Live releases his back catalogue, which, quite naturally, I was happy to do. The releases have all been timed to happen on special days of the year, such as the solstice, etc. Of course, this is Steve's thing. Ambient Live is also releasing Steve's new stuff, such as the Dr. Silbury 2-CD set last year, and, of course, 1967 and a half, which is the brand new one, just released on St. Valentine's Day, February the 14th last. These new releases come with incredible artwork, really, and extra inserts and so on. We're trying to make the physical item a lot more attractive to the customer than, say, a download. In this way, the customer really gets something more like a work of art, both physically and musically, hopefully. And that gives them something of value, worth hanging on to, you know, not like some file in a folder. A lot of work goes into Ambient Live's Mooch releases. So, for example, it takes over an hour to make one copy of the 1967 and a half CD and DVD set. These things are not mass-produced, and they're not cheaply thrown together. And I hope the buying public will recognise that a lot of love goes into those products.
Okay, here is a Blue Lily Commission track. All four Blue Lily Commission albums have been reissued as digital downloads by Pond Life. They're at pondlifestudios.com. This is from the Eastern Evening album.
Thank you.
The Crypt of Artificial Intelligences and Golden Ear Machine doubleheader was especially exciting, as these have never had a real release. I'd never heard Golden Ear Machine prior to this. Was there just never an opportunity to release these albums? They're both really good.
No, there never really was an opportunity. I mean, with Golden Ear Machine, that was a recording that I did in the very late 90s, and at that point, Dead Earnest, they were not going to be able to release that album. In fact, Andy had just released In Search of the Acid Metal Grill, so he was not really up for releasing another album straight away. And then The Crypt. I mean, I have said elsewhere that the problem really with that was that Bill Woods of Taste Records was going to release it, but because of problems that we had with Starhenge, and I have to say Bill's reaction to how the manufacturing of that went, The Crypt was never released. The relationship between me and Bill broke down, and I didn't really speak to him much after that. And I went over to Andy Garibaldi at Dead Earnest Records. And by then I had more new stuff and better stuff, so The Crypt was never released. Yeah, that was the story of that, really. It was just one of those rather unfortunate things.
Here's another Blue Lily Commission tune, and after this we'll talk to Steve about Blue Lily Commission. This is Scarab, and it's from the Wine Songs album. Thank you. The Blue Lily Commission albums are in the news these days, too, as they've been made as available as digital download purchases from Pond Life. What sets Blue Lily Commission apart from Mooch for you?
In 2000, I got my first keyboard, my first synthesizer, and I was listening to a lot of ethnic music at the time, and I just decided... I felt again that I had gone as far as I could with Mooch at that point. I recorded an album called The Oasis, and it was basically a flop. None of the tracks really have ever... I've actually used some of the riffs and sounds from those tracks, but none of them have ever been completed. So I felt the need for a new project. So this idea for a solo, modern and ancient-sounding project came about. I had all these ethnic instruments that I wanted to use, I wanted to sample and record loops from. And I also recorded the albums in a quite unusual way. I wasn't using multi-track recording. I wasn't using MIDI recording. I was recording the pure sounds, the audio files, and manipulating the audio files and actually mixing these tracks as I went and slowly building them up into kind of pieces. So that's how the Blue Lily Commission pieces came about. The sort of iconography, I mean, it was all very Egyptian. I love the artwork for the Egyptian, ancient Egyptian artwork. And I remember reading about the Blue Lily, or the Blue Lotus as it's sometimes called. And there were various programs on TV over here in Britain about the effects of the Blue Lily. So again, it all just came together slowly and in my mind.
Here's something I know a lot of people haven't heard. Steve did an album with Don Falcone that was released on Don's Noah Poetry label in 2006. It's called Gothic Ships. It's mostly ambient music, but with an experimental edge. This track is called Out There. we've got Chris Gill joining in on the fun now. I chuckled when I read on your MySpace page that you were surprised to be asked by Steve to do vocals for him, because you've done a great job, and I even voted Jupiter Event my favorite song of 2007.
It was nice working with Steve, and it's still nice working with Steve. And one of the nice things about it is we actually get to work together face to face in the flesh, as it were. Whereas these days, so many collaborations that you do via the internet, which is okay and it's great, but it is so nice to be able to do it actually with the person in the room. One of my overriding memories is the amount of tea that you drink when you're at Steve's house. And fortunately, there is a loo, which is fairly close by, so that's handy. It's funny, but I also notice myself getting little idiosyncrasies as a vocalist. As I say, I've never been a vocalist before, but you get these idiosyncrasies. I notice that I like to have the microphone at a certain height. I like to have my knees slightly bent, which seemed to put me into a singing mode as opposed to being in Chris mode. But Steve is a very easy guy to work for. He has great clarity in what he wants to do, and he has a great way of putting that across to you. So actually what you really feel like you're doing is you're turning up on a Saturday and you're working with a friend on putting something out, and there's no real strain there, which makes it a joy. I've worked with so many people in the past where you argue and you fight and you end up throwing things at each other. But with Steve, the biggest problem is getting up the stairs and then trying to keep all the tea inside you.
Has working on the Mooch album been a very different experience from your own Band of Rain music?
Yeah, I obviously enjoy recording the Band of Rain thing because that is mine and I can put in anything that I want to do. Having said that, I never did really very much vocals with Band of Rain, so you then get the departure of working with Mooch that you're suddenly doing vocals that you haven't done before. And you're also not in charge anymore, which is fine because I like working with Steve. Steve's an easy guy to work for. But I found it really odd when he asked me to come and do the vocals, because I never considered and still really don't consider myself to be a vocalist. It's only actually re-recording Jupiter Event and in doing 1967 and a half with Steve that I've actually suddenly realised that maybe I can sing. Which then leaves me with another dilemma, which is that if I do another album now with Band of Rain and I was to sing on it, I can't actually sing and play the guitar at the same time. So it still means that I can sing on an album, but I can't do it live, which leaves me with another dilemma. But I really enjoyed doing 1967 and a half, because although I was only a lad during those years, I actually did my first gig in 1968, which was just after when that album's all about, really. But as I said to Steve at the time, I do remember all the colours. I remember all the music. I remember going down Carnaby Street with my dad. I remember the miniskirts. I remember the policeman when they used to smile. I remember the Union Jacks being out everywhere, and everyone was back in Britain, which was great.
All right, we got something interesting coming up next. Steve, you've brought a little goodie with you that no one has heard. Tell us what we're about to hear.
This is an excerpt from a piece that I've recorded that is for an album called The Pagan Year. And the eight pieces on this album will each describe an aspect of the year, the two solstices, the two equinoxes, and the four Celtic festivals between them. So each piece is going to describe part of the year. And this piece that you're about to hear is from the vernal equinox, which is the spring equinox on the 22nd of March.
Thank you.
has been fun, Steve. Amazing what we can accomplish in the Cyber Studio.
Thanks for asking me, Jerry. You've done a lot for Mooch over the years, and I really appreciate that. But yes, thanks for asking me to do this interview, and more power to Oral Innovations.
Thanks, Steve. I hope everyone has enjoyed our Mooch Steve Palmer special. You'll find important links on the playlist page. I'll wrap things up with another song from the new 1967 and a half album. This is called English Wisdom. We'll see you next time. Enjoy.